This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Millennicon Literary Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention is going to take place March 20th through 22nd. The event's presented by the Miami Valley Fandom for Literacy, which promotes reading appreciation through fantasy and science fiction literature. The guest of honor at this year's convention is Laura Resnick. She started her career writing romance novels, then switched to fantasy, and she's also written on the craft and business of writing professionally. And in A Blonde in Africa, she tells the story of her 8-month journey across the continent. Laura Resnick and Christy Johnson, Millennicon 29 co-chair, join us to discuss increasing literacy and this year's convention. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And thanks to both of you for being here this afternoon. Christy, start off by telling me about what Millennicon is and how Millennicon got started.
Well, Millennicon is a science fiction literacy convention, and basically a bunch of friends got together and said, we needed another con. There was one major one in Columbus, and they wanted one closer to home, so they got together and they started it 29 years ago. And right now we focus on the writing aspect of science fiction. And we want to promote the books that make the movies and have the kids read, because our belief is that if kids are reading books about science fiction and fantasy, it will promote them to go into the sciences and get more interested in those topics. So our major goal is to collect books and give them to other nonprofits. And Millennicon is our major fundraising event that we have every year, that we invite authors and editors and people that do Masquerade and all sorts of people, and we come together and we have a lot of fun, and we get money to buy more books to give out and get the kids to read and adults to read, everybody.
So 29 years this is going to be. That's remarkable. And how much of an impact on literacy has Millennicon and your organization had, do you think?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, but, you know, we get all kinds of people coming in that will meet an author and find a new, you know, set of books to read, and they get excited, and they get excited when they meet people that they've read for years and finally get to meet face to face. So it's exciting. We just, you know, we donate books to schools, and we do the hospice in Cincinnati, the VA Center, and all sorts of places. So we know we're spreading the love around with the love of books, and we just hope that, you know, people are enjoying reading more.
Oh, that is marvelous. Now, how did you happen to pick Laura as your guest of honor for this year?
Well, Laura's been a past panelist for several years, and she's been up and coming, and she's got a big array of books that comes out, and we like to promote people that are local and people that support us. So she's always been on our side and always helps us out and comes out. So it's like this time it's going to be her year to shine. So we're excited.
Laura, you have a nice smile on your face. How does it feel to be picked as the guest of honor for Millennicon?
Oh, it's nice. They kind of do everything for me. All I have to do is show up and try not to trip over my own feet.
So this is part of the Miami Valley Fandom for Literacy, Christy.
Correct.
So besides Millennicon, you're listing all these other things that you do. What are some of the other programs that you're involved in?
We host the Hal Award, named after Hal Clement, one of our grand authors of science fiction. We donate $200, and we pick either a teacher or a librarian that is active with reading and science fiction or fantasy writing, and we present them with an award and money so that they can further their program. We also sometimes we get special requests. We've had in the past from places, maybe a school has lost their library or whatever, and we will, you know, try to gather up money or books that their specialty and hand that over to them and get them built up, because it's all about reading.
Now, I've heard your group has an international aspect to it. What is that?
There was one time we got a request from Russia.
Really?
Yes. He wanted some books by certain authors of science fiction. He was a teacher at a college, and he wanted the books in English. He wanted the kids to translate them. So we gathered up money, got the books, and boxed them up and sent them out there, and he was so excited.
Laura, how did you become an author?
Oh, well, you know, I was raised in an author's house. My father's a science fiction writer,
okay.
Mike Resnick, who's been writing professionally for over 50 years now. And because I was growing up in a writer's house, I never, ever wanted to be a writer, because I saw my whole life what kind of lifestyle it is. You spend most of your time alone. Yet here I am. The income's very unsteady. You're mostly reviled and denigrated, so I wasn't going to write. But I was in my early 20s, and I had this overdraft of about $3,000 in a bank account that I needed to pay off, and I read this book called How to Write a Romance and Get It Published. And since I had grown up in a writer's house, I thought, okay, I'll write about 6 books. Maybe I'll sell one. It'll be just about enough money to pay off that overdraft, and then I'm going to get on with my life. And I was on my 4th book when I sold the first, and by then I was really hooked on writing, and that was kind of it. I've written about 30 books since then. I tried twice really hard to quit writing. Like, I gave it up, I turned down contracts, I walked away, and within a year I was back both times, so I stopped trying to quit.
So there's not a 12-step program for writers?
Apparently not. No, I'm stuck. I've pretty much, yeah, given up the idea of quitting. This is what I do. I write books.
Now, I read in your biography that you worked various odd jobs in England right after college, and that one of those actually required you to sign the British Secrets Act.
Yeah, I could tell you about it, but then I'd have to kill you.
Okay, so I was going to ask you, can you tell me about this job, or are you not allowed to tell me?
It's actually not nearly as interesting as it sounds. I temped for about a year for the government actuarial department. So I had access to all kinds of apparently secret statistics about population projections for the Great Britain. See, it's not nearly as interesting once
not
I
nearly
tell
you. As exciting. But you still had to sign the British Secrets Act, which is compelling in itself.
And they were a little disorganized. So I was there for 10 months before they realized, oh, no, we haven't gotten Laura to sign this. And one day they called me and said, you have to sign this now.
So. You're talking about how your dad, Mike Resnick, was a sci-fi writer. What kind of influence did he have on you growing up?
Well, like I said, mostly I didn't want to be a writer because of him. And in fact, once in a while, when something goes wrong in my career, he'll go, well, you want
to... So he never planted the seed with you that you...
Oh, gosh, no, okay. No. My parents wanted me to do something with a salary and benefits and security. But when I wound up writing, they didn't disapprove, obviously, because they were in no position to criticize, my father having done this his whole life. Mostly, I think, unlike an awful lot of people, I came into writing with extremely realistic expectations. I think people... think about writing the way they do about acting, that, you know, oh, I'll go to an audition, I'll become a movie star. Oh, I'll sell a book, I'll become Daniel Steele. I knew that really it's just a workaday career of you write book after book after book. Everywhere you go, nobody's ever heard of you. You lose publisher after publisher. That's pretty much what my career has been like for the most part. But I knew that going in, and I think most writers don't.
Has anything surprised you about your career in writing?
Still being here surprises me. apart from the fact that I tried to quit twice, I counted this the other day for an article I was writing. 9 publishers have either dumped me or folded under me over the years. Not many writers survive that. So just still being here surprises me a lot.
So you've outlasted all these publishers.
Yeah.
That actually might be a good sign, Laura.
Being able to buy a house surprised me a lot. Yeah, mostly just that I've kept it going this long, because the other thing, you know, if you're raised in a writer's house, most people disappear from the business. It's a very hard way of life. So,
now, maybe between you and Christy, you can clear me up on this. What's the difference between science fiction and fantasy?
Science fiction tends to be futuristic, and it's based on an idea or a possibility of what could be, what might be realistic. Whether it happens now or 5,000 years from now, it tends to be based in a notion of something that is perceived as realistic, even if it's futuristic. Fantasy is not at all a realistic. Fantasy is based on magical, supernatural ideas. In almost any fantasy novel, whether it's set in the here and now, in the past, or in an imaginary world, a supernatural, paranormal, or magical premise will be the basis of it. The window dressing, I always think the spine of fantasy, and what I really like about writing it, is it's always about good against evil, which, growing up from a Catholic Jewish marriage, obviously I'm obsessed with that.
Christy, what makes science fiction and fantasy such good vehicles for promoting literacy?
Because it can go anywhere. I mean, your imagination is just taken all sorts of places. And, you know, people that come to our convention or any other science fiction fantasy convention, we all have the love of reading. That's basically the thing. And we have other people to talk about our passion. So it's a kind of a community on its own. I mean, we all get together. We all seem to read a lot of the same things, or we like a lot of the same things and the same themes. So I don't know. It's just a good feeling all around.
You have any theories on that, why it works so well for promoting literacy?
I think it's especially attractive to young people because science fiction and fantasy are both the literature of possibilities, of something so outside the narrow confines of your world. Even if you look at, YA fantasy, it's about teenagers saving the world. If you look at science fiction, it's about, if you think of, say, something like Star Trek, it's about where an entire society can go with its future, or how one person in fantasy, it's often one or two or five people, can change the world. And I think that's particularly exciting to young people who have found their world a little narrow and are looking for something that explodes their imagination. And if you get somebody reading young, they become a lifelong reader.
We're talking with author Laura Resnick and Christy Johnson, who's the Millennicon 29 co-chair. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Christy, I have never been to a convention like this. You're looking at me like you're giving me a funny look. What's in store for me? What kind of things will I be able to do at Millennicon?
Well, we have 3 days of programming. We call them panels, on anything from Masquerade, from your favorite books. We do have one on remembering Leonard Nimoy. We threw that in real quick. And Terry Pratchett,
that's a great topic. Yep.
Yes, and some of your favorite TV shows. We have science programs. We have a gentleman that used to teach chemistry who's coming in from Iowa and doing a kids panel and an adults hands-on panel and, teaching me a little bit about, how science works and kind of getting them interested and getting the kids, motivated. Our artist guest of honor is also coming in, and he's teaching the kids how to draw fantasy cats. So that ought to be, we have a lot of things. I mean, there's something for everybody. Our website already has the programming on there. We have readings from authors that are going to do maybe new excerpts from new things or something they're working on or their old things, just to draw them in and kind of give them a taste of what their book is about. So we have a full track of children's programming. So if you have a kid or whatever, we keep them busy and active. We have a gaming room where we have some young people, some teenagers have taken over, that are teaching you different games. If you've wanted to learn how to play Magic, if you wanted to learn how to play a game called Lunch Money Bear Money, I don't know, they have it. So we have just all different kinds of things. And we're family oriented. So we have something for probably the most couples in my world. You have one person that's really into science fiction and fantasy and one that's not. So we try to have something for both. So if you're not really into the science fiction and fantasy, there's other things you can do. There's, science programs. There could be, we have one on Victorian clothes. There'd be something for the other person to do, plus the kids would be busy.
So what's attendance typically like at Millennicon?
We average about 400, 420.
Okay. And I take it the number's been growing over the years?
Well, it kind of rises and falls. I think the gas prices hit us 2 years in a row, but this year the prices are lower. So maybe some of our friends will come in because we get them from all over. I have people coming in from West Virginia and Michigan and so forth. So I think gas prices are helping and they're, saying, hey, we could do that drive and come on in. So hopefully we'll have a good attendance this year.
Is the sci-fi fantasy community a pretty tight-knit bunch, would you say?
In certain aspects, because we all kind of go to convention and see our friends. And this is kind of a reunion. We come together once a year. Some people only go to a couple of conventions a year. And thankfully, Millennicon is one of them. And they don't see them for a whole year. And they get together. And it's like the year has never, gone so fast. And they get caught up. And, we all have all that same thing in common, that bond of the love of reading and science fiction and fantasy. So kind of keeps us as a close-knit group.
Also the love of parties. Science fiction is mostly about the parties.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask, is that what's kept Millennicon going for 29 years, you think?
I hope so. I think it's because we run a pretty even track. I mean, we're not far left. We're not far right. We do things for the whole family. We keep the whole family together and busy, and we try to keep our guests varied, and, we treat them good, and hopefully they come back. We're lucky because not only do we have Laura, we have Laura's dad's coming in, Mike Resnick, but David Drake is coming in, I think, for the third time. We had him as a guest of honor several years ago. He's come back on his own dime just because he likes hanging out with us. So we get some other authors that come back even after they've been guest of honor and come on in and, you know, and be on panels and have a ball. So there's something going on with us. So we're glad to have
Something's working, right?
Yes.
29 years. Laura, you started out writing romance books. So I'm curious how you went from writing romance into writing fantasy. I mean, was it much of a transition or?
It was a huge transition. What I mostly am is a storyteller, and I think if I had been better suited to writing romance, I would just still be in that genre. I don't care that much what the genre is. Genre's, you know, just largely a structure to tell your story, but it took 14 or 15 romance novels in the market to find out I just wasn't that good at it, and I had to find a different genre. And I love high adventure, I love good and evil, I love supernatural things. And around the time I was on my eighth romance novel, the legendary science fiction and fantasy anthologist, Marty Greenberg, who produced over 2,000 short fiction anthologies in his life, he was looking around for a new writer to fill some slots. He wanted someone, you know, new, female, experienced, but not that well known. And he asked me to do a story for one of his books. And Marty liked it and asked me to do a bunch more. And he always had a lot of books going. So suddenly, as a kind of a sideline, I didn't even think about it. It was like a paying hobby, sort of. I'd published 20 short stories in the genre and won the Campbell Award as the best new science fiction writer. And people started saying, so when are you going to write a book in this genre? Which I had not thought about at all. And I wasn't that happy in romance. It wasn't going that well. So I pitched a few books, and I think it was the third one. It was a fantasy series that I sold. It was big, epic, blood and guts, sword and sorcery, good guys getting killed. You couldn't do anything more different from what I had been doing as a romance writer, and it sold, and I loved writing it, and I just kind of completely switched my career at that point. It was much more what I'm good at doing, killing off nice people.
You've been hooked ever since. Now, I've seen the word urban attached to what you write, urban fantasy. What exactly does that mean?
That was it's a separate subgenre, kind of just like, you know, any other field. There's lots of subdivisions. I started off in epic fantasy, the big sort of Game of Thrones kind of thing, but I'd had this series in mind for years and kept trying to sell it. It just took years to find the right market for it, and then I did, and I've been writing it ever since. Urban fantasy tends to be contemporary with a supernatural theme. Probably the most popular or best known example these days would be Charlene Harris's True Blood series, which was a big hit on HBO for a few years. That came out of a series of urban fantasy novels. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was urban fantasy. X-Files was urban fantasy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I loved X-Files. I always thought it was just straight sci-fi, but that's actually urban fantasy.
Well, there were supernatural things that went on, so it was kind of a science fiction fantasy crossover. But the series that I write is, the urban fantasy series I write is comedy, which was one of the things that made it hard to sell. Comedy is a tougher sell. It's called the Esther Diamond series. It's set in New York City, and it's about a struggling actress, which was my first choice of profession because I'm not very bright.
Okay.
It's about a struggling actress who, via her career, keeps getting involved in these supernatural misadventures, and it's tons of fun to write. And I think the seventh book in the series, Abracadaver, came out in November. And I'm working on the eighth one. So that's urban fantasy. And it's another aspect of the genre, a very popular one right now.
Priscilla called. She likes the Wrinkle in Time series. You're impressed that the author did research to get the science right. I guess that's what a lot of science fiction writers, they go to that extent. They want to make sure they're getting the facts straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, science fiction is often very heavily researched, and there are even, you know, people writing it like Gregory Benford, who are scientists. And Millennicon kind of covers the whole spectrum, because I know previous guest of honor there was Rob Sawyer, who does very heavily science-based science fiction. And then you get me, who I changed one of my teachers' lives. He wondered, how could a bright girl be this bad at math and science? So I'm the other end of the spectrum, much more interested in philosophical themes and action and character than I don't do any science, really.
Yeah, you were talking about Esther Diamond and the fact that she was a struggling actress because at one point you thought you were going to be an actress. What were some of the other reasons that, what were some of the other things that caused you to come up with the Esther character? Was she based on a real person?
No. I actually, you know what? I thought of this series so long ago when I decided I wanted to get out of romance and into fantasy. This was actually the first thing I wrote and tried to sell. It just took years to sell it because urban fantasy wasn't popular then. So it was so long ago, I can't quite remember. I remember I had lived in New York and wanted to do something set there because it's a really rich setting, and I wanted to do something about an actress because that was a background I knew and was interested in. And there were other things that came up. She partners up very often with this extremely old man who runs a little secondhand occult bookshop in the village, because I was researching occult and thought that would be fun. And every book they tackle something different in some neighborhood of China, of New York. The one book was The Miss Fortune Cookie. They're in Chinatown dealing with fortune cookies that contain death curses that are actually killing people. Only gangsters. They don't kill nice people in the Esther Diamond series because it's comedy. No pet death is sort of a comedy rule. Unsympathetic Magic, they're in Harlem, and people are being killed by voodoo curses. In another book, Doppelgangster, they're in Little Italy, and wise guys are being mysteriously blown away by their own perfect doubles. And so it's always something like a very kind of strange twist. All of these elements came together in my head, but I don't really remember the origin, except that it was just something that came to me and that I wanted to do and tried years to sell and finally did. And now we're going strong.
What's the story behind A Blonde in Africa?
Oh, that was one of my attempts to quit writing. I'd written about a dozen romance novels, and at first I had really enjoyed it, but after a dozen I was burning out. It wasn't going well. I kind of wanted to get out. And crossing Africa was something I'd always wanted to do. I'd read about this when I was a teenager, and it was something I wanted to do. And I was really miserable, and a friend of mine said to me one day, you know, sometimes to make something happen, you just have to take the first step willy-nilly and have faith. So I thought, okay, I'm going to make a deposit to take this trip, to leave in February, and trust that I'm somehow going to make this happen. And I did that, and 2 weeks later, I sold two books for the exact amount of money I had figured out I would need to do this. I said, well, it's meant to be. I wrote my final two romances absolutely as fast as I could, packed my bags, and left. And I joined a company, actually. It's called GURB Expeditions. You go with a group in a truck. You pretty much live rough the whole way. I mean, really rough. There were places where we were, you know, I was like going into the jungle with a machete to cut down bamboo so we'd have vegetables for dinner. So sometimes it was really rough. And then there were other times we'd, you know, stay in guest houses or camp in a nice campground. But it was 8 months. I crossed Africa from the shores of northern Morocco all the way down to the Cape of Good Hope. I entered South Africa very shortly after it was decided. Mandela was released, and it was decided that they would have free elections.
So are you still involved in journalism?
Not very much, really. No, I write a monthly column for Novelist Inc., which is an international organization of professional novelists, and that's kind of the only nonfiction I'm doing right now.
You have any advice for aspiring writers, Laura?
I think the two most common mistakes, you see this all across the board, that aspiring writers make, easy to avoid, they don't write enough. So write a lot. Write, you know, every day. When you finish one thing, write the next. Writing is a skill. It's not God-given talent that flows from your muse-blessed fingers. It's a craft. It's a skill. Practice makes you better at it. And the other one is they don't persist enough. You have to be very, very persistent. My career is certainly proof of that. You have to keep submitting. You have to keep trying. You have to keep, you know, reaching for the next goal.
Persistent like Melinicon, 29 years. Christy, what kind of reaction do you get to the event?
Busy. Okay. I get a very busy reaction because, you know, I'm trying
to
get everything.
There's so
much going on. Yes, because trying to coordinate everything. And because my committee is in two states. I have some people in Kentucky. I have some in Ohio, and they're around. So I only get to meet the core group a lot, and the other people, my programming person is, you know, 2 hours away. So, you know, it's kind of hard to get it all together, but we do it. We just do it. And so it just keeps me hopping. But I'm really excited this year because everything seems to be calm. I know my guest of honor is here.
Mm-hmm. And she's a good one.
Yeah, she's a good one. And she doesn't have to fly in. I don't have to worry about picking her up or anything.
Yeah,
she
I
knows
won't get
where
stuck
we
in
are.
An airport.
She knows the hotel. She's not going to get lost. And, you know, so we're in good shape.
What about responses from the public? How do they react to the event?
Well, it all depends. You get some people that come in and it's like, where have you been? You know, it's like, we've been here for 29 years doing this, you know. Never heard of you.
Where and have you been, right?
Yes. It's like, you know, we've been publicizing. We're out there. We're doing our thing. So a lot of people get excited because we have an art show and we have a dealer's room where they can get some really cool things. So there's a lot of things just to keep you busy. So I think they get excited. We get a lot of new people, and you could tell the new people because their eyes are really big like saucers when they get to see everybody coming in.
So give me the information again. When and where is MelanaCon being held?
It is held at the Holiday Inn off of I-275 off of Hawk Road. It starts tomorrow. Generally, registration opens at 4 o'clock. And things wind down about midnight, but the parties go on to about 2. And then we start up again at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning with registration, and programming starts at 10. And we again go to midnight and party till 2. And then Sunday we have from 10, I think, until closing ceremonies is at 3. So it's a pretty busy weekend full of all kinds of things that'll keep everybody happy, I think.
And is there a website people can get more information at?
Sure is. www.melanacon.org.
And you can also find a link to that on our website, wvxu.org. Well, Laura and Christy, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Author Laura Resnick and Christy Johnson, who's the MelanaCon 29 co-chair. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now next on 91.7 WVXU.